Thanks for listening to Schlereth than Evans On Demand, brought to you by Gravina's Window Center of Littleton. If you're in the market for replacement windows, there's only one place to turn. That's Gravina's Window Center of Littleton. Visit them online at windowsforyourhome.com.
Every morning at 8 a.m., we take the best question you have for Mark Schlereth using hashtag question mark on social media and the text line. And now it's time for Question Mark.
All right, this question comes in. Let's provide some context first. A comment, a quote from Demaryius Thomas is getting some run this morning, in which he said, quote, "One of the biggest things we have to fix is when we would do something bad last year, and the next thing you know, it would be completely shot. We didn't bounce back. We have to have that edge. That means getting to work. Sometimes last year we had guys who were just happy to be here, and if you're just happy to be here, then you're not going to work like you should." Follow that up with our conversation with Troy Rankin. He was talking about how they miss guys like Peyton Manning, DeMarcus Ware, even Gary Kubiak. And this question on question mark on the RobMoslaw.com text line, 303-713-1043. Mark, how much do the Broncos miss and regret not having Wade Phillips?
Oh, I think that's a big thing. I think, one, Wade Phillips to me was a calming presence. Wade Phillips was a guy that he'll get in your butt and, you know, he'll motivate you and he'll do those things. But he also had this kind of, and I've used this term before, this avuncular presence, almost grandfather-esque, where the guys didn't want to let him down. They wanted to play hard for him. And he had such expertise in calling plays. And I think one of the things that Joe Woods struggled with at times is when to call the right defense in the right moment. And you get a little bit behind the eight ball and you get a play called in late and you don't execute it very well. And part of that is just like any coach, until you start doing it, you know, and it takes time to get comfortable when, where, to be like second nature and to not second guess yourself. And I've had offensive coordinators that have come in their first time calling plays, and like every time you get a play in, you got 6 seconds to snap it. And so now it's just impossible to execute it because you have to just run up and snap the ball without really having time to dissect things and to see what, you know, what changes are being made and what the defense is doing. So, you know, all those things play into that. I think they missed his presence. I think they missed him tremendously. I think it hurt him last year to some degree. He was their guy that they love. I mean, you talk to any of those guys, Aqib Talib or anybody, man, they light up when you talk about Wade Phillips to them.
And it's why the Rams are one of the trendy picks to win the Super Bowl this year, in part because of what Wade did with that defense a year ago and continues to add to it with Marcus Peters, Aqib Talib. I mean, the Rams, I know the Eagles are the defending champs and you still have Aaron Rodgers, mm-hmm. and you still have Russell Wilson, and, you know, Dallas will always get run because they're Dallas. But to me, the Rams are the must-watch team in football this year.
Yeah, I think I'm not.
Aren't they? I mean, with everything they got going on and the personalities they have, to me they're the team. If there's a team I want to watch besides the Broncos, it's the Rams right now.
Yeah, they're a team. You know, they're a team. Obviously, with a young head football coach who really, like, he's a football junkie. He's like a young John Gruden. Like, you can call that dude up, Sean McVay, at 3 o'clock in the morning, and he's like, "Hello," you know. Just going over some film. And that, to this day, that's still how John Gruden is. I mean, the guy is an absolute freak show.
There's a beautiful banana.
Really understands the game, understands matchups, understands how to exploit people. But like with Sean McVay, when I talked to him, when I was calling one of his games, he was like, one of my first, the first big hire for me was, I need Wade Phillips. Like, Wade Phillips is on the market. I would be a fool not to go after Wade Phillips. That guy, he has forgotten more about football than I know. And I need that leadership. And I need that. I need a guy that has, you know, been a head coach before and has been fired. And, like, like I lean on him. He knows, he's been coaching in the NFL longer than I've been alive. He's like, why? That's not threatening to me. I know I don't know stuff. I need him. It was like talking to him was just amazing. It was eye opening the way he looked at the game. And so that's a guy that, you know, I understand why it's a trendy pick. I understand why the guys like playing for him.
You know, we continue to talk about this leadership void for the Broncos. And I have to admit, I'm surprised that this is an issue because the last thing I thought the Broncos would have to worry about once they won a Super Bowl was going to be leadership. Because my thought was that when you have that many guys who are part of something like that and get to witness it and learn from and observe and watch guys like a Peyton Manning, like a DeMarcus Ware, like a Wade Phillips, I guess I thought it would be more seamless. I thought that you would have more players who were there that would be ready to step up and take that torch and become the next big leader, the next voice that keeps the culture going. And, you know, even the same thing with Joe Woods. I was expecting it to be more seamless. And so that to me is a surprise, I'll be honest, that this team, this franchise, coming off winning a Super Bowl just a couple years ago, seems to be struggling so much in the leadership area to the point where they felt a need to go out and make a clear conscious effort in this draft to draft guys who were captains and leaders in college. I thought it would be easier.
Yeah.
Looking back on it, and you're an interesting person to talk to about all this because you saw it firsthand coming off the two Super Bowls, and it didn't take long after those two Super Bowls for things to go entirely the opposite direction for you guys after you won a couple of Super Bowls.
Right.
To the point where we were having these same kind of conversations about what happened, why did things drop off so quickly with the Broncos and why did they seem to lose their way?
Right. Well, I mean, obviously you lose John Elway. You know, he doesn't come back for the 99 season, but you still have the majority of your team intact. Then you make a decision not to play the guy who went 6-0 in his starts at quarterback as John's replacement in Bubby Brister. You decide to groom a young guy that you think has the potential to be really good. And, you know, within a couple of weeks, you lose Terrell Davis and his career essentially is over. You know, I mean, all those things factor in. But again, I just think you can never underestimate, you know, the leadership value of having a guy at the quarterback position that he walks in the huddle and regardless of what the situation is, you feel like you got a chance to, you know, rectify the sins of the first couple of quarters and fix it. And, you know, that to me was like one of the big things about playing with John Elway. Like John Elway walked into a huddle and you could be down, you know, you could be down 28. And there was that sense of, we got him right where we want him. You know, one play at a time. Let's go make this thing happen. And you felt like, okay, we can do that. Look, I don't have a problem with that. So, you know, that you lose that. And not that John was a huge, you know, not that John was a huge voice guy, you know, not that he was a, you know, in your face type of guy. But there was just that presence, that confidence that, you know, when you have a guy like that, you don't want to let down. And a huge void. When those guys walk out of your building, we talked about it. I mean, think about the superstar quarterbacks that have left teams and how hard that void is to fill. I mean, Buffalo is still looking. Like, how long ago did Jim Kelly retire? They're still looking. Miami, how long ago did Dan Marino retire? They're still looking.
Yeah, but is that leadership that they're still looking for? Or is there just guys that can play?
But no, I think it's.
It's not like they've had really, really good quarterbacks who you're like, well, really good quarterback, but he's just not that good of a leader. I mean, no, they haven't had good quarterbacks.
Right. The one time they had a decent quarterback who's a really good leader was, you know, they were able to win. I mean, Chad Pennington. I think the last time they won the division was when Chad Pennington was the quarterback. You know, So, yeah, I think it's a really difficult, it's a really difficult task, but I think that leadership void. Now, I mean, you can't blame Dan Marino's retirement on the recent struggles, but there's a lack of culture in Miami. It's one of the reasons they got rid of Ndamukong Suh. They traded away Jarvis Landry. I mean, they purged their roster because they know they've got a serious culture issue. Denver drafted the way they drafted because they knew they needed a culture upgrade. So those things are real, you know, and like I said, when you have a guy like Peyton that's attention to detail, that is, you know, in every aspect, like Peyton will go up and pester the coaches about like, oh, I want it run this way. And he is unrelenting until he gets his way. That's how he operates. So when you have somebody that's that domineering and that has his fingers in every, like, protection, I want it called this way. This is the way I want it called. Well, we call it this way. This is the way it's going to be. Well, I'm not going to, I won't put up with it until I get it called my way. And you pester and pester and pester until you get it called your way. And then you put it in the book. This is the way it's going to be called from this point forward. And when you have that kind of guy that's that domineering, that has that much attention to detail, that's going to just kind of, you know, fight until he gets his way, all of a sudden you're like, well, why do I need to develop? Why do I need to, I don't need to have a voice. Peyton's got my back. Peyton will do it. You almost just rely on, hey, DeMarcus Ware is going to lead us. I don't need to, hey, I'm Von Miller. I don't need to lead. I just need to make plays, but DeMarcus is the voice. Why am I going to say anything? I'm just waiting for DeMarcus to say something. And I think that's what happens to teams. And I think it's what is exactly one of the things that happened to the Broncos.
You know, and we had Troy Rank on, and we were talking about it, and he said, you know, look, you got a bunch of guys around this team that got the ring in 2015, and, you know, for a lot of guys, once you get the ring, it's tough to get back to that level of hunger that you had before, which makes, mm-hmm. if that's true, first of all, is it true? Because if it is, it makes what you guys were able to do going back-to-back even that much more impressive,
right.
Because you guys were actually better in the second year than you were the first year. You seemed even more on a mission in the second year than you did the first year.
Mm-hmm.
But is there something to the idea? You've been part of a Washington team that won a Super Bowl. You're mm-hmm. part of Bronco teams that won Super Bowl. Is there something real to the idea that when you win a championship, for a lot of guys, now there's some that the feeling is so cool. It's like, man, that's awesome. I want to go get another one. But for most people, does complacency, does satisfaction settle in?
Oh, I think it does. It's not for most people, but I think there are some people. And all you need is some people. I think one of the things about winning a champion, there's a lot of things that play in. There's just not one answer. But you get a ring on your finger, and a lot of guys are kind of sated by success, and now it's about making money. So your contract is close to being up or whatever. You've got the ring. I want to get paid. I want to set up my family for life. And guys become, if you're not up or the organization isn't willing to deal with you, then you're like, screw it. I'm going to go somewhere else, and I'm going to get paid. So now I'm playing for money. And I think that's a big aspect of, you know, a football team and the way they manage their caps. You know, they'll always tell you, but we can't pay everybody. Not everybody's going to get paid. And, you know, guys, hey, I helped this team win a championship. It's my contract. I deserve to get some money. I deserve to get paid. And, you know, that's part of the deal that goes on. And I think some guys, now there's a handful of guys that are sated by success. We know the guy that plays really hard when his contract is up and he gets paid and then he just goes into coast mode. We've seen that happen more times than anybody cares to talk about. So we've seen those things happen, Mike. So you got to know who you're paying. But I think for us, just my personal experience, the reason more than anything that we were able to stay so motivated in year two, winning back to back Super Bowls, we were obviously very talented. We kept the majority of our team together. But it was that loss in 96 that still drove us. Cause I think we felt like, and you could get Alfred on, you could get anybody on that was part of those teams. We felt like we could have won back to back to back.
Oh, yeah!
And we felt like we were good enough to win three Super Bowls in a row, and we let everybody, you know, to quote the late, great Denny Green, we let everybody off the hook. And so there was a mission aspect, like unfinished business aspect that was much stronger than anybody's desire to be sated by the victory, you know? And I think that more than anything is what drove those teams.
Well, then I guess you look, I do, I look differently now at what John Elway said last year about this team being soft, because while that bothered a lot of people and there was a, you know, quick backlash of, hey, John, you know, if this is the team you built, you know,
right.
If you think it's soft, don't you have to look in the mirror? But everything you said about what John was like as a player and as a leader and how much his absence was felt once he left, then the guy knows what he knows. He's seen it. He lived it.
Mm-hmm.
So if he's looking at this team and he says that they're soft, then should we all look at this group of veterans that won the Super Bowl in 2015, and do we have to look at them differently, and do we have to, unfortunately, label a lot of these guys as just being satisfied with winning the Super Bowl and they've lost their edge?
See, I don't.
And the hunger that was there prior to 2015 just isn't there, even as the losses have piled up.
Well, I think that would be unfair simply because who you got pulling the trigger. Like, I know that in that 2015 season that Brock played a lot of games and that Peyton wasn't Peyton from an execution standpoint, but he still was Peyton Manning. He's one of the most respected quarterbacks that has ever played the game. Ever. You know, I was in the hallways here at Fox and Tony Gonzalez and I were doing a show together yesterday, and we were just talking about kind of quarterbacks in general and different offenses and that, and he's like, if you had a chance to play with any quarterback in the history of the NFL, like, which quarterbacks would you play? And it's funny because we had this conversation, and he goes, for me, it would either be Peyton Manning or Tom Brady. That's the direction I would go. And his philosophy was, like, who's exploiting tight ends and who's using the tight ends, you know, from his perspective. And my perspective is, I want to be able to dictate on the line of scrimmage, so I want a guy that isn't in no huddle and isn't in, you know, 11 personnel the whole game. Like, I'd love to play with Peyton Manning, don't get me wrong, but I wouldn't necessarily care for the offense the way you gotta sit up there on the line of scrimmage and you gotta wait for him to make a play call. Like, that isn't appealing to me. And so it's kind of a different perspective, but when you lose a guy like Peyton Manning because of, you know, who he is, even though he wasn't playing great, you've lost the lifeblood that courses through the veins of the organization. Like, you lost the man. And I think that's a really hard, it's just as virtually impossible. And then you replace him with kids, and you didn't keep a veteran. Like, I think there's, you know, I think that was a huge mistake. I've told you that many, many times. Not keeping a veteran quarterback around. Big mistake, but you know, you've got the leadership void and you didn't keep anybody around. I think those are tough things.
So do you think this is still a hungry group of veterans? Do you think this is a group of veterans that is bothered by, embarrassed by, angry enough by what's happened over the last couple years, 10 and 18 in their last 28? That they have the level of hunger necessary to turn this thing around, or do you think that they still are somewhat satisfied because they got their ring and a lot of them got paid?
Right. I think that the hunger thing, the softness thing.
And let me attach a name and a face to it.
Okay.
Do you believe right now you see in Von Miller a hungry football player?
I'm DFW.
Missed you know, missed the OTA.
Mm-hmm.
Highest paid defensive player in football.
Right.
You know, he's Von Miller. I mean, look, every time you look up, he's doing something fun during the off season.
Yeah. I believe that he works exceptionally hard. I believe that he's going to have a great season. I believe all those things about Von Miller. I also believe that he's not the guy that you hang your hat on to lead. Like, he's DF'd up. He's going to show up and he's going to play hard. He's going to make great plays because he's that exceptional. But I think what we've learned is he's not going to be the voice of your defense. And so you need to develop whoever that voice is. You know, I think that DeMarcus Ware retires and you're waiting. Like, okay, Vaughn, here's the torch. And Vaughn's like, that's not what I do. I'm happy action fun guy. I'm, hey, let's get together glue guy. I'm, I bring the whole team together, but I'm not necessarily the get in your butt and motivate guys. So
while it's cool that DeMarcus Ware is back as a part-time coach.
Mm-hmm.
And it seems like it's nothing but upside. Is it somewhat damning for these veteran players, especially the veteran holdovers from the Super Bowl team in 2015 on defense, that DeMarcus Ware is being brought back as much for his leadership skills? That they're still relying upon him to lead? To mentor? To set a tone? To remind guys of how they're supposed to act and go about their business?
Well, I think, like I said 2 weeks ago, when they made the announcement of DeMarcus Ware coming out to help, as it's as much about continuing to mentor Von Miller as I think it is his ability to teach pass rush. That's just like, I don't know, that's just kind of how I feel.
Isn't that wrong?
Why?
Because shouldn't he be able to be out on his own now? And shouldn't he be this team's DeMarcus Ware? Shouldn't he have learned? Shouldn't he? I mean, you're talking about the guy who is your best player, is highest paid player. Shouldn't he be ready to, like you say, take that torch? Why do you have to bring back DeMarcus Ware just to get the most out of Von Miller?
Well, I don't know. All I can tell you is I've been around a lot of great players who weren't necessarily the leaders on their team, who weren't the rah-rah guys or the get-in-your-grill guys, and they were great. They're great dudes, and they were great players. But, like, not everybody can lead an organization. Not everybody can lead a football team. Like, there's plenty of guys who get hired that have nothing but the utmost credentials. And they get into that position of leadership, Mike, and they have been mentored by some of the greatest leaders in the world, and they poop in their hats. Josh McDaniels. I mean, go through the tree. Eric Mangini. Like, Eric Mangini's he's a good friend of mine. When he was at Cleveland, they wanted to charge the players, or they charged the players for, like, Gatorade and socks, if you need a new pair of socks. Like, come on, dude. Like, there are guys who are great men, who have been mentored and tutored and everything else. I mean, just look at the coaching profession. Norv Turner was one of the most sought after potential head coaches in the history of this league because of what he did with the triplets in Dallas. Norv Turner, I mean, he had one season with the Chargers where they went to the AFC Championship. Beyond that, what did Norv Turner ever do as a head coach? I mean, on and on and on it goes. So not everybody's just cut out. Some guys are just cut out to play their asses off. And that's what you have them there for. Like, hey, he's great at that. You know, we don't want him to get in front of and talk to the team. Like, it's not going to work out well.
Is it the player's job to lead, or is it the coach's job to lead? That's coming up next. Oh, if that doesn't get you in a good mood.
No, nothing will. If that doesn't work, nothing will.
Take that, coupled with the fact that we're not expecting to get storms today. We get a respite from hail. Good stuff. Put a smile on your face.
You know what? You put the boom boom into my heart.
You know, we've been talking about leadership today.
Mm-hmm.
And this Demaryius Thomas comment that he made to our buddy Jeff Legwald, where he said, quote, we have to have that edge. That means getting to work. Sometimes last year we had guys who were just happy to be here. And if you're just happy to be here, then you're not going to work like you should. To which naturally comes this response, I think, from people. I don't think I'm going out on a limb. For people saying, well, this is why you need a stronger coach. This is why you need a better coach. That in times like these, when you have a leadership vacuum,
mm-hmm.
it's up to the coach or coaches to provide it. You agree with that?
I think that's a big part of it. Yes, I do. And I know people aren't going to want to hear that, but I think it's a legitimate, big part of what needs to happen.
But in order for a coach to provide leadership, doesn't he have to have the players to carry it out? Do you believe that DeMarcus Ware can have the same kind of impact leadership-wise in this role that he's in compared to when he was a player and going out there and playing and dominating?
The exact same, no. Can he make a difference? Can he? Yes. I think a lot of times you get a guy, like, for instance, for Von Miller. You know, if a coach says something to Von, will Von listen? Of course Von's going to listen. Von's a great guy. But does it truly resonate? Is it one of those situations where you're like, boy, you know, I'm not going to do that again. I'm really going to button it up here or whatever. Or do you go, I read you, coach. That's great. That's great stuff. I'm on it. But, you know, ultimately you're like, I'll be all right. I'm just going to kind of do it my way. When DeMarcus Ware says, hey, Vaughn, man, you need to button this up, then Vaughn's going to go, all right, dude, I respect the fact that we played together. I respect you as a coach. I respect you as a man. And dude, I'm going to totally listen to whatever it is you have to say. Like there's just a different level of respect, right, wrong, or indifferent. It's different. And I believe that there's an impact there.
But I think if you're expecting your coach to come out and set the tone leadership-wise, and you're not getting it from your top players, I just think that's destined to fail. Look, you played under Mike Shanahan,
mm-hmm.
and you guys had, we all know the success that you guys had under Mike during the Super Bowl years.
Right.
But I also know the incredible leadership that was in that room as well. Then if Mike was so responsible for setting a leadership tone, then why did things drop off so quickly after you guys had your run? Why then in the final years of Shanahan, if he was responsible for creating this leadership tone, why did it drop off so noticeably? He was still there. He was still leading. He was still talking about the same things that were important as when you guys were winning Super Bowls, and yet it wasn't translating in the years following. Why?
Well, I think there's a lot of different things that we could talk about, that, you know, would point to a reason.
But you lost a lot of the guys that were true leaders, and they were replaced with guys who weren't. You went from John Elway and Terrell Davis and, Shannon Sharp types to Dale Carter and Daryl Gardner and turds like that. Same coach.
Yeah, well, but
different kind of voices in the room, different kind of leaders.
Absolutely. But there is a, when you're talking about just the organizational leadership of the organization, So yeah, you had guys that when Shanahan spoke, it didn't fall on deaf ears. Guys that would take it out to execute.
Mm-hmm.
But when things weren't going well, or we didn't play well, or, you know, or we weren't practicing well, then Shanahan was the guy that stopped it and had that gravitas to change the direction by blowing the whistle and saying, we're doing it again. You sorry sacks. You know, and we'll stay out here until you get it right. We'll stay out here until you practice the correct way. So there was an accountability there, and that when he needed to take over the leadership role, because there are going to be times, you know, there's ebb and flow, and you can have great leaders on your team and have, you know, lack attention to detail one week, or, you know, lack great practice one day. And Shanahan was there to nip that in the bud. And, you know, I mean, every week we heard how great practices were. Well, maybe they weren't that great, and you didn't do anything in the midst of practice when things weren't going well, Vance Joseph, to start over again. We just kept hearing how great practice was. So,
but like, if you have a Peyton Manning and a DeMarcus Ware, those practices probably end up being done differently, don't they?
Well,
and you get a different impact on Sunday.
But that's what I'm saying. When they're going the wrong direction, then it's the coach's responsibility. I mean, the players would be like, hey, let's go, let's go, let's go. But if it's still, you know, the players, the leaders are saying, let's go, let's go, let's go, and it's still not going like you'd like it to, the coach needs to step in and say, this is BS, guys.
But I think, Mark, all due respect, which you mean now you know where I'm going with this, is
right.
That I'm going to disagree with you, is that the coach can only do that so often. And, you know, at some point it's got to, all right, let me give you an example. What is arguably one of the biggest stories in sports right now is what's going to happen with Kawhi Leonard. And the relationship between the Spurs and Kawhi Leonard went real south this past year. Now, you got in Greg Popovich, somebody who's regarded as maybe the best coach in all of sports right now,
mm-hmm.
right? And yet, that thing deteriorated between Popovich and Kawhi Leonard. Now, I'll ask you this question. If Tim Duncan is still playing for the Spurs, and Tim Duncan is Tim Duncan, does Kawhi Leonard sit out the season like he did? I say no way. I say that Tim Duncan's presence, Tim Duncan's advice,
mm-hmm.
Tim Duncan's, hey, what are you doing, Kawhi?
Right.
He's playing.
Okay,
Greg Popovich couldn't get him to play, but do you agree with me that if Tim Duncan is still with the Spurs, Kawhi Leonard's not sitting out like he did this year?
Yeah, but that may be true. I mean, we'll never know. It may be true. But it may, the presence, the reason he may have played is because when Popovich tried to publicly shame him and then had Tony Parker and Manu Ginobili publicly shame him, maybe Duncan is the one guy that would stand up to Pop and say, that's not the right thing to do in this case, Pop. Rethink your position. And maybe he stops Pop from public shaming, and he stops the other guys from being on the Pop bandwagon to public shame the guy. And maybe he comes back because they give him the space and they give him the respect to figure out what his injury is.
Okay, but who's creating that? It's not the coach.
Right.
It's the respected leader, the peer.
Yeah, absolutely. But it goes hand in hand. When things aren't going well as a football team, sometimes that leadership has to go on the coach. That sometimes, you know, you stand in front of a room every day and you create the culture. You create every day. The culture has to be worked on. You're creating it. You're affirming it. You're talking about it. You're the one that's establishing it. It starts at the top and it trickles to those guys. And if you don't have that credibility, or if you're just relying on the guys to do it and things go off the rails a little bit, it's your responsibility as a head coach to get it back on. So you have to have it from both. You have to have great leadership from your players, but you have to have a coach that has great leadership ability as well.
For those of you who love to hear Mark get agitated and get fired up about something, about a topic, and get kind of mad, oh, I got the topic. And you're going to hear the reaction. You're going to love it. Coming up next.
This is the best football program in the country. This is as good as it gets. And it's because of so many people, coaches, players. I want to thank all the former players. Want them to know that they are always welcome here as long as I'm here. I feel a strong sense of urgency to do my part to continue and push that as far along as we possibly can.
Oh, this is too easy. This is too easy, but oh well. I'm not going to take a freebie. I'm not going to turn down a freebie. So, Lincoln Riley, head football coach at Oklahoma. You know, the place where a school president at Oklahoma once said, we got to build a university that the football team could be proud of.
Right.
They're just signed him to a new contract, 5 years, $25 million. So he's going to be making $5 million per year.
Mm-hmm.
Head coach of a college football team. For, I would assume for you and everybody else who feels that college football players, college athletes are getting taken advantage of and need to be paid, this is probably yet more grist for the mill that just drives you crazy, right?
Well, it is. I mean, there is so much money in college football. And come on. I mean, what does Nick Saban make? $8 million a year? Yeah, he's a great coach. There's no question. He's the face of you know, college football. I get that. But, you know, crying poor house and the NCAA fat cats that are all making, you know, six and seven figures that are crying how they could never afford to pay players. I just know this. And I think it was, oh gosh, who said it? Anyhow, one of my former colleagues at ESPN, who's a basketball player,
Williams?
Billis?
Played
for Duke. Jay Billis. He's much smarter than I am. He's, you know, a lawyer and he's big time, but he's like billion-dollar organizations don't get broke by paying their employees. Like, they're a billion-dollar organization. You can find a creative way to take care of your players, to give them a little scratch in their, you know, a little scratch in their pocket. And I'm not saying make them, you know, I'm not saying make them millionaires by any stretch of the imagination, but, you know, I am saying create an incentive program where they make a few bucks and some money gets put away. And if they graduate and all those things that, you know, they've got, they can make a few bucks and they don't have to, you know, they've got enough money to go out and get a burger and do some of those things. I just think there's a way to do this that would compensate the athletes that would be fair. I will say this, even if you just lifted the restrictions off of the university sells your jersey, the university sells memorabilia and they make money off of it. Why can't your star players, why can't they do an autograph session? Why can't they make a few bucks? The rules to me are archaic. They keep the player down so the fat cats can get fatter.
Okay, I wholly respect your opinion, but I'm just a regular dude. I've got a daughter who's getting ready to be a sophomore in high school.
Mm-hmm.
I'm already thinking ahead to college. My son's 4 years younger than her, so he'll come up very quickly after she's there. And so there's the part of me, and I guess you're telling me that my thinking is archaic, but there's a part of me as a dad who's like, wait a minute, you're telling me my daughter and then maybe my son will be good enough to get a scholarship to a Division I school? Man, that would be like, you know, that would be like finding the end of the rainbow and there is a pot of gold there. I mean, as a parent, I'd be like, holy smokes, this is great. So why are you downplaying that? Why are you downplaying the value of that? As a parent, I'm thinking I hit the lottery.
Yeah, no, I mean, I understand that. I understand that the scholarship, is great. And I think it's valuable. There's no question.
I mean, it would be life-changing. I think I speak for a lot of parents out there that if you got one or two kids and they can get a college scholarship, that is literally life-changing for the parents.
Hey, listen, absolutely. And, like, I don't downplay the value of education. I don't downplay the value of a scholarship. It's great for the parents. I understand that. It's great for the kid that otherwise wouldn't be able to go to school. I get that value, Mike. All I'm saying is that value is minuscule compared to the value that player in a big time program is bringing to that university. So in my mind, it's no longer equitable. When you're talking about paying, you're building facilities that are billion-dollar facilities and locker rooms to attract, I just read an article, and there was a picture of Nick Saban with an eighth grader he just signed that's 6'7", 320. And you're talking about the amount of money that are in these programs. Look at state officials. You know who the highest paid state official is in every state in America?
Yeah, a football coach.
It's a football coach. there is a lack of balance. The fact that, hey, Lincoln Riley, and now he's in one of the greatest programs in the world at Oklahoma. But let's just say that all of a sudden Nick Saban retired and Alabama came to Lincoln Riley and say, hey, we want you to be our head coach. He could leave that university without any punitive damage. But if a kid goes to Oklahoma and he's not playing and Alabama has a scholarship for him, he's got to sit out for a year. Like, there are inequities here that, and again, I'm not saying, hey, the kids need to be paid $1 million. They're not, they're student athletes, but at some point, you're marketing these kids, you're making money off these kids, and yeah, they've got a scholarship, but I think it needs, with the money that's out there, I think it needs to be more. And I think some of these fat cats that protect the NCAA because they're protecting their own pockets, those are the ones that need to be exposed. So I just don't think it's equitable. I don't think your quote-unquote free education, as I always say, there's nothing free about the education that I got. I paid for it in a series of 1-year contracts to play football for the university. There's nothing free about it. So that's just, that's just my personal opinion.
All right, folks want to see you on television today. They can win.
3 o'clock this afternoon, I'll be on Speak for Yourself. So I've got a light television day. I'm only on this afternoon, so you know what I'm going to do right after this show.
You're going to go take a nap.
No, I'm going to get my swole on, dog. I'm going to get my swole.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
Really?
No, sure.
Or are you going to take a nap?
No, I'm going to get my swole on.
All right.
Then I'm going to take a nap.
Then I'm going to eat. Then I'm going to take a nap.
No, dude, I'm getting... Like,
oh, oh, now you're serious.
Oh,
now you're
I'm
getting
going,
serious?
Oh, dude, I'm dry. You know how I get right before the football season? I'll get down to about 235.
Uh-huh.
I'll be looking great. And by the end of the season, I'll be 265. That's how it works. It's a never-ending yo-yo.
All right.
Come on.
He's on the yo-yo, and the yo-yo means getting swole. All right. Good job. We'll see you later. We'll talk to you again tomorrow. In the meantime, we got Pritz and Cecil coming your way next.